We're back on the Bengal Speed podcast. I'm Lindsay Patterson alongside Tyler Dragging, Charlie Goldsmith. You guys, we made it through week 13.
Made it through week 13. I mean, we don't have as many bumps and bruises as the Bengals. Literally, the Bengals have bumps and bruises. But, you know, made it through another week. I do low-key wish that I was down there in Miami. I heard it was great weather. You know, it too bad coronavirus is ruining 2020 for all of us. But, you know, it is what it is. How are you doing, Charlie?
I'm doing good. I was also not in Miami this weekend, and I'm looking forward to seeing Andy Dalton play on Sunday. We've been talking about this game for like 3 months, and even though it definitely won't have the luster that that we all thought it was would when Dak Prescott got hurt, we'll get to see Andy Dalton at Paul Brown Stadium. It's kind of fun.
Who would have thought Andy Dalton's going to be the best quarterback when we were going to see that matchup at Paul Brown Stadium in December?
So are you saying that Andy Dalton's better than Brandon Allen?
I mean, yeah.
You know, when the schedule was first released, I mean, pretty much everybody thought Andy Dalton probably wouldn't play. Maybe if the Cowboys were up big, then he would get, you know, some victory snaps in the fourth quarter. But we were all expecting Joe Burrow versus Dak Prescott. And I was also expecting the Cowboys to have somewhat of a winning record and in contention in the NFC East. Now, the latter is still correct. They are remarkably in contention in the NFC East. Every team is in contending in that division. But, you know, the Cowboys, they aren't a good football team. Injuries have hurt them. Coaching has also hurt them. They have underperformed severely this season. So this weekend, it should be interesting. Bengals fans, I know they're excited to see Andy Dalton back in Paul Brown Stadium, and he's going to play significant snaps as the starter. But before they get to that game, they have to worry about the Tuesday night football game tonight against the Baltimore Ravens.
I want to go to this, you guys. I don't want to back it up too far, and we'll get to predictions later in the week, but the fight, I wouldn't even call it the fight, because I know a lot of people are saying it's the brawl, of course, national attention, fingers are pointing at Cincinnati, you know, all of the little clips that come out on social media whenever there's a fight on the football field, you are going to see parts and pieces of clips. I'm going to start out by saying this, and I'm not going to be long-winded and go on and on and on, but look, Sean Williams shouldn't have did what he did. Mike Thomas, that second one, probably arrived a little too early. And I know you can debate the first one and just getting all of that out of the way. I know a lot of people look at Brian Flores and say, protecting his team, look what he's doing. You can look at that in two different ways. I think you can look at Miami and look, we talked about Miami last week and the rebuild that they were able to do in less than one season. I mean, credit to them. Credit to Brian Flores. I think he honestly should be up for Coach of the Year, and he could win it with what he's been able to do in Miami. Great football coach. I mean, we even heard from Jesse Bates after Sunday's game, and he credited Flores what he's able to do, what he's turned around in Miami. He's a good coach. I'm not breaking news there. We can talk about that all day. Great football coach, and a lot of people in Cincinnati would probably take him a heartbeat. I don't agree with him charging the Bengals sideline. I know how it's looked after the game. Well, they're a winning team. He's protecting his players. I don't know if he was protecting his players when he's charging the sideline and Von Bell has to hold the coach back. I think it's possible to look at those two situations, and I get it. It's the heat of the moment. It's football. Hits are going to happen. Extracurricular activity is going to happen. I don't agree with Miami's coach going to the Bengals sideline.
Do you agree with Sean Williams stomping on a Dolphins lineman's legs?
No, I don't agree with that, but I don't agree. I think the Bengals were in the wrong 100%. At the same time, Miami's not innocent in this. I mean, you look at the Bengals trainer, unfortunately, he was going out to tend to one of the players, and it could have been an accidental knock, but he gets a knock and he's on the ground. And, you know, all of a sudden, Miami's the heroes. And I think you could look at that and say two teams were wrong. I think you can look at that and say the officials never had control of the football game. I just don't understand where all of a sudden he's the hero in that game. And that's what I really felt like the storyline was afterwards.
Well, in my opinion, I don't think there are any heroes in the game. And I didn't see a lot of the storylines saying, you know, Brian Flores was the hero. Now, I think there were a lot of events that happened prior that festered and culminated in Brian Flores making the reaction that he made. Now, Mike Thomas, two penalties on special teams, hitting Jakeem Grant early. Now, yes, you can, like you said, some controversy over if, you know, the first one was a penalty or not, but the second one was definitely a penalty. That was blatant. And then, you know, even before that, the Tyler Boyd and Xavier Howard, you know, scuffle on the sidelines. So the game was chippy, and the referees, I mean, they clearly lost control of that game. We saw that when the bench is clear. Now, as a coach, I think, I know Brian Flores was sticking up for his players. He thought that, you know, there were some dirty plays and, you know, highlighted by Sean Williams stepping on Solomon Kinley's leg and then Mike Thomas twice hitting Jakeem Grant early. Now, one could have been early, the other one maybe not. It depends how you look at it, whose perspective you're on. Now, you know, he's just sticking up for his players. And, you know, I can't fault him for that. Now, after the game, he did say that, you know, he lost his composure a little bit and he has to be more calm in those situations. But in the heat of the battle, I don't mind what he did. He didn't throw any punches. He wanted to confront the Bengals and tell them what they were doing was wrong, and that's how he felt. So, you know, I don't think what he did was wrong. I don't think he's, you know, a hero and all this. I don't feel like the, you know, pieces that I've read and the you know, things I've seen on TV were portraying him as a hero. But I mean, maybe you saw some different things than I've seen. But, you know, I just think, you know, tempers were very high that game, especially after, you know, some of the events that transpired, and he reacted. He was angry. And, you know, sometimes when people are angry, they, you know, lose their composure a little bit. But he didn't throw any punches like some of the players that we saw. He didn't, you know, there wasn't a reaction where I think he should have been fined or disciplined at all. I just think, you know, he lost his composure a little bit and he was sticking up for his players. And as a player, if my coach did that, that would build even more respect that I have for him, because, you know, he's sticking up for the guys that he's coaching in his locker room, and he will, you know, quote unquote, go to battle for us, especially if he believes that, you know, we were in the right and we're getting treated wrong. And if Zach Taylor did that for the Bengals, I would say the exact same thing. And the players on the Bengals, I'm sure, would say the exact same thing. So to me, from an athlete's perspective, I like what he did.
No, and I want to go back to that just a little bit. He definitely didn't throw any punches out there. I just felt like it didn't make sense to charge the sideline. I get protecting your team. Like you mentioned, if Zach Taylor did it, I think it would make, I would honestly just feel the same way as a coach going to another sideline. I think it would be wrong. I agree that he was protecting his team 100%. No problem with that. I just have a problem with, like, no penalized. We'll find out about the fines this week. You don't think he should get fined for it? You think that it shouldn't be a penalized situation?
No. After what transpired and what led up to him charging the sideline, I mean, he had a player that was down on the ground hurt. Then, you know, Sean Williams also in that game stomped on a lineman's leg. And You know, I also thought, you know, the fight, I wouldn't even call it a fight, the shoving match between Tyler Boyd and Xavier and Howard, you know, that got his, you know, temperature up to now their scuffle. I don't think it warranted, you know, an injection, but, you know, there were multiple things that transpired that game to led up to Brian Flores charging, you know, the Bengals sideline. And it's not like he charged all the way up to the sideline either. Like, I think that's, we're overblowing the situation. In my opinion, we're overblowing it a little bit, and I don't think he should be penalized.
Regardless of who's in the right and who's in the wrong, here's the perspective I come at it from. With Zach Taylor and with this coaching staff, we can only judge when what we see on the field. And I kind of went back down memory lane. What are some of the most memorable on-field moments, really the most memorable on-field coaching decisions and coaching impact, the impact of Zach Taylor's coaching that we've seen in Cincinnati? On the negative side, he benched Andy Dalton. On the positive side, the Bengals kept fighting in Miami last season. This year, the Bengals rallied to beat the Titans. This season, on the negative side, the coaching staff had some how much it is arguable, but some responsibility in what ended up happening to Joe Burrow. And now there's this. This, regardless of what the suspensions end up being, which we know now, what the fines end up being, and regardless of how it ends up impacting the state of the locker room, this is still one of the defining on-field moments of the Zach Taylor era. If in 6 months from now the Bengals have a different head coach, I do think this is something that we turn to and remember. I'm especially interested to see how the Bengals respond to this, but because that could be what ends up being most telling. Because again, when we go back and evaluate what we've seen from the Bengals on the field, we've seen a team that hasn't won a road game under Zach Taylor. And we've seen a team that has left little to almost nothing memorable, no tangible signs of progress, even aside from the positive memories I just mentioned. So I think we'll learn a lot about where the Bengals go from here over the next couple weeks. But for now, this is all we can evaluate with this coaching staff.
Do you think what happened in the second half, and I think they're two different things. I think this team doesn't know how to make second half adjustments. And we said that under Marvin Lewis, they just couldn't adjust and they looked terrible offensively. Yes, they're without Joe Burrow, but we've talked about it plenty of times. You find ways to win. Do you think that factored in to how this team really finished out the game on Sunday?
Well, you're right. The Bengals have been awful in the second half. The last three games in the second half, they've been outscored 35-7. If you count the blowout in Pittsburgh, they've been outscored 49-10 in the second half. The offense ranks 31st in NFL in second half points. The defense is in the bottom half of the league in giving up second half points. They haven't scored a touchdown or converted a field goal in the third quarter since week 7. When I looked up that stat, I had to make sure my eyes were not deceiving me. They have not scored a point in the third quarter since week 7. They are 1-5. When they have a halftime lead, you know, the stats are just mind-boggling how inept the Bengals are after halftime. Now, obviously, some of that is due to coaching. You know, when a team cannot perform well and, you know, convert their first half performance and translate that into the second half and make enough, you know, adjustments in place to win games, especially when you have a halftime lead, yes, you can point to coaching. But also, you have to put, you know, some of the blame on the players too. Letting their foot off the gas, you know, in the third and fourth quarters and not, you know, finishing games. And some of that, you know, sometimes in team sports, you have to learn how to close. And I don't really think the Bengals know how to close. And that sometimes is, you know, attributed to a team being young and inexperienced, and there's still a lot of young players on the team. Yes, they're, you know, sprinkled in some veterans too, but it's also a sign that this team is rebuilding and still, you know, learning each other and learning on the fly. And it doesn't help matters that you're without a lot of your best players, and Joe Burrow, Joe Mixon, Trey Waynes has not played this year, DJ Reader's an IR. So the Bengals are missing a lot of their key players that they expected to contribute heavily this year. But yeah, their second half numbers are atrocious. They're one of the worst second half teams that I have ever seen to this point.
It's funny. I agree with – you can't argue with the fact that the Bengals have been awful in the second half, but I think it's less coaching and adjustments and more the state of the team and the quality of the Bengals' defensive lines and secondary, and then on offense, the quality of the offense post-Burrow. I mentioned on the last podcast we recorded, I'm not even going to evaluate the offense except for a couple offensive linemen post-Joe Burrow leaving. I think that there is too much inexperience at quarterback, too much missing with Joe Mixon not in the backfield to even have a fair shake to give a fair shake to the coaching staff and what adjustment they're able to make after halftime. I think that, you know, in the last two games, the Bengals offense has scored one touchdown in each game, and then extending it to Washington, that offense did nothing in the second half after Burrow left. So I think regardless of what adjustments there even would be, the offense isn't going to produce. Defensively, I think it's a different issue. Defensively, I think similar to offense, kind of, it's a talent issue. I think that's more, I think you can glean more from seeing what the defense does after halftime because they are theoretically closer to full strength with their best players available. But still, I think that for a team that has almost no depth, a team whose backup defensive linemen are guys like Marcus Hunt and Amani Bledsoe, and a team who's leaning in the secondary on guys like LaShawn Sims and Tony Brown, I think that what you see later in games is fatigue and again, lack of depth being exposed by offenses that are able to withstand that. Well, on the flip side of the field, the Bengals offensive line and the Bengals passing game isn't viable enough to take advantage of that on the other end. In the fourth quarter and the third quarter as well, teams are more aggressive. Teams start to take more shots. Early on, you're kind of getting more of a feel for the game. And in those situations, the Bengals just aren't built to be successful in those situations with the defensive line and the secondary they have.
I want to go to these next four games. And obviously, we'll give a prediction later in the week. But I think this coaching staff, I told you guys maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago or right after the Joe Burrow injury that I felt like Zach Taylor's job was going to be safe this year going into next season because he was without Joe Burrow and they're dealing with injuries all over. At the same time, if they don't find, and I feel like this Sunday is probably their best chance out of the four games to finally get another win. And I mean, it's going to be at Paul Brown Stadium. Zach Taylor could probably go out 2 years in a row without getting a road win. I don't know, man. I don't know what's going to happen with this coaching staff. I don't know if it's Zach Taylor. I don't know if it's, you know, Jim Turner's gone. But when I look at the defensive side, they're without a lot of their playmakers too. I mean, all the money that they spent on free agency, yeah, Von Bell is out there. Credit to the secondary and Jesse Bates, William Jackson III over the last couple weeks. What Lou Anarumo has been able to do for the last 3 to 4 weeks, really after the Pittsburgh game, holding opponents to 20 or less, I think has been pretty impressive.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. Holding the last three opponents to 20 or less, that is something that can be commended. You know, Jesse Bates has continued to perform at a Pro Bowl level, at a career high in tackles last week. Von Bell, like you mentioned, has played well too at that strong safety spot. Josh Bynes, a free agent pickup, he's had some nice moments in the last, you know, few games. William Jackson III has elevated his performance. So, yeah, the defense has, you know, played well, caused some turnovers. The problem is they're not getting much assistance from the offense. And, you know, the offense is, as we pointed out, has been inept since Joe Burrow exited the game in the third quarter in Washington. They've only scored two touchdowns since Burrow suffered his season-ending injury. And they can't run the ball either, obviously. So, you know, that's affecting the defense when the offense is going, you know, three and out and have, you know, short drives. The defense can't rest on the sidelines. So then they have to get back in the field and try to stop the offense. And, you know, eventually they get, you know, worn down. And that's part of the reason why they have, you know, taken step back in the second half. And they have given up points in the second half. We saw it in Miami. We saw it, you know, against the New York Giants. And then, you know, obviously we saw it in Washington, but then we also blame that with, you know, them being shell-shocked because of Joe Burrow's injury and being lifeless after that. So, you know, the defense has played well considering all the blows that they have had to endure this season. Starting with defensive line, Geno Atkins hasn't performed anywhere close to where he's been in the past. And part of that is due to Father Time. Carlos Dunlap is no longer in the building. Trey Waynes, top free agent pickup at cornerback, hasn't played a snap yet. You know, the linebackers, they've been, you know, mix matching them, but, you know, Josh Bynes has been performing okay. Jermaine Pratt's kind of been, you know, idle. He hasn't improved as much as this season as you would have liked in year two. Then you have the secondary. The secondary has been pretty good despite, you know, not playing with Trey Waynes, with especially highlighted, as I alluded to earlier, Jesse Bates, who's I would be surprised if he does not make, you know, the Pro Bowl, at least, you know, or even a third team all pro. And then Von Bell, he's been solid, you know, against the run and has been, you know, a reliable, strong safety. So the defense has played well, to answer your question. Lou Anarumo does deserve some praise. He gets some props. But at the end of the day, I mean, we're trying to find ways to help this, not help the team, but trying to find some positivity in a season that's gone by the wayside. And, you know, if it is a bright spot, yes, Lou Anarumo does deserve some credit for elevating the defense's performance, and they haven't given up more than 20 points the last three games.
I think it's almost two separate conversations with Lou Anarumo at times. There's the Lou Anarumo who has really done a nice job developing Jesse Bates. I think William Jackson has shown improvement. I think Carl Lawson has shown improvement. I think the defensive line has played better than the sum of its parts, while the secondary has struggled. I think the other side of the conversation with Lou Anarumo, though, is what happened with Carlos Dunlap and Geno, and what we're seeing from Geno Atkins. Despite Atkins dealing with an injury this season, the production clearly hasn't been at the level that the coaching staff has expected. And clearly the coaching staff didn't get the most out of Carlos Dunlap when he was here. I think that those two factors do weigh on Lou Anarumo's plates. So at the end of the day, it'll be about when evaluating Lou Anarumo's entire season. Yes, this stretch of games that the Bengals are on carries a lot of weight. You know, really the Bengals have played for the last 2 months, basically really good defense, with the exception of the game against Pittsburgh, one quarter against Indianapolis, and then a game against Cleveland where the secondary was just decimated and Baker had the game of his life. But I do think, you know, if you're thinking of the balancing scales, what, you know, the Geno Atkins and the Carlos Dunlap situations do carry weight. And I think that if we're going to have an entire Lou Anarumo conversation evaluating his season, that deserves to be mentioned as well.
We'll flip sides right now. Zach Taylor, not a fan favorite in Cincinnati right now. And obviously everyone knows this guy has a lot on his plate. And by a lot on his plate, I mean he's calling plays, he's the head coach, and I'm sure there are a lot of responsibilities with all of that. I mean, we even heard from Gio Bernard a couple weeks ago and just said, you know, he deals with a lot of stuff. He didn't go into detail of everything behind the scenes, but just said his head coach does that. Look, they're struggling. And I'm not going to sound like a broken record and say you got to win with what you have, but they do. They have to find ways, because if you look at the NFC East right now, half of them are playing with backups. Jalen Hurts is going to get the start, and honestly, I think he might be a better option than Carson Wentz, and that's not really, you know, stretching it too far. But I think when you look at this offense and just looking just absolutely brutal in the second half of some of these football games, and the defense is stopping the opponent and they're just giving them no shot offensively, should Zach Taylor give up some of his play calling?
Well, we know how he feels on the matter. He was asked that question directly this week, and he said, and I quote, "I'm comfortable with how we're doing right now." You know?
how can you be comfortable with this? How?
That's what he said. Do I agree? Now, I'll say this. I have always said, since I saw a couple games, since I started covering the team and I saw a few regular season games, that I believe Zach Taylor has too much on his plate as a young coach. Now, he's the head coach, he's the spokesperson for the team, and a play caller. And, you know, some people say, well, I mean, that's not a lot. But to me, that's too much to ask from someone who has never been a head coach until now. Not to mention, you are a head coach of a rebuilding team. So you're doing all that, and your team isn't as good roster-wise when you face the likes of the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Ravens, and the Browns. I mean, they all have more complete rosters. So to answer your question, I would try, if I were Zach Taylor, especially now that the season's fallen by the wayside, they're not going to the playoffs, it's going to be over in four games, give Brian Callahan a shot to call plays just to see how he does. And, you know, that will be good for him as Callahan as well, because if he wants to have, you know, other opportunities, you know, he'll have that experience. And so that will help him pursue other opportunities when his time comes, because I'm sure, I haven't asked Brian Callahan this directly, but I'm sure he wants maybe to be a head coach one day. His father was. And I'm sure as offensive coordinator, he would like to call plays. I mean, that's what offensive coordinators typically do. Now, you know, I do have to cut Zach Taylor some slack here, though, because when he went into this season, he wasn't anticipating Joe Burrow not playing the entire regular season. He wasn't anticipating Joe Mixon, from what we're seeing, might miss the entire rest of the season, the way things are looking. I haven't heard that, but I mean, there's only four games left and he hasn't played. CJ Uzama, their starting tight end, has been out. So Taylor hasn't had his full deck of cards to operate with, and that has affected his play calling ability and the team's overall ability, and their, you know, ability to be able to produce an offense. They ranked 27th in the National Football League in offense, and some of that is due to them not having all their players.
I don't think you can be too much of a Monday morning quarterback when analyzing Zach Taylor's play calling, especially because if you look back at the stretch the Bengals were on before Burrow's injury, you see a stretch of really good game plans. The Bengals offense had their best start of the season against Indianapolis. That was a really well-called game. The Bengals offense, I think, had its best game of the season the following week against Cleveland when they, I think, set a franchise record in fourth quarter touchdowns. That game, it looked really good. The following week, they get a statement win against the solid Titans defense with solid play call. Against Steelers, the Bengals were bad. I do think Joe Burrow got the ball out of his hands quickly, but I'll give you that one. Then the following week, they play Washington, and the Bengals by far were the better offense in that game before Joe Burrow left. I think that what we are seeing with the Bengals offense now is more of a statement about who they have out there than whether the Bengals call a run on third and one or a short pass on third and one. And then on top of that, you know, it's not clear within the Bengals organization how much, say, Brian Callahan has in play calling. So as a result, Callahan could be a huge piece of the play calling that we're seeing right now. It's completely possible that while Zach Taylor makes the final decision, just like Duke Tobin makes the final decision, or just like Mike Brown makes the final decision in the front office, it's completely possible that Callahan still has an incredible amount of say, just like Duke Tobin does in the front office. We don't know that dynamic. That's kind of, you know, especially because we're not in the locker room, that's kind of what the coaching staff keeps separate, kind of keeps private to itself. So I think while there are reasons to challenge the Bengals play calling, specifically against Pittsburgh, against Baltimore, I don't see as much of a valid reason why the Bengals coaching staff should be criticized so much, specifically Zach Taylor and his role for what we've seen against New York and Miami, especially when you top on the fact that we just don't know what the situation is with Callahan. For example, you know, it was reported that Al Golden calls plays for the defense on third down. We just don't know inside the organization enough to know what impact a change would even have.
Let me ask you guys this. With four games to go, how do you judge this coaching staff? Do you look at, say they lose every game the next four games, which is a real possibility, especially if they lose this next Sunday. Do you judge this season on injuries? Do you just say, look at all the guys who are injured this year, all the star players? I mean, you can point to stars on offense, Joe Mixon, Joe Burrow, two of the top players on the team, and offensively, defensively, or without DJ Reader, you really never had a strong number two corner. Trey Waynes never saw the field this season. Or do you say it is what it is? This coach has not won a road game in 2 years. They won two games this year and had a tie. And I'm saying this is if they don't find a win in these next four games. How do you judge this coaching staff?
I mean, to me, I know for fans it's hard, but you have to be realistic. And I've said this on podcasts and on our videos, before the season started, we didn't have the Bengals winning any more than six games. Now they've won two and they've tied one. And we were projecting that if Joe Burrow was playing, if Joe Mixon was playing, if Geno Atkins was Geno Atkins, if Carlos Dunlap was Carlos Dunlap, none of that has unfolded the way that we had originally anticipated. So I don't think Zach Taylor is going to win a road game. I honestly, there's one road game left, and that's against the Houston Texans. I mean, the way the Houston has played since they fired their coach, I know that's trigger words for some Bengals fans, but they've played a little bit better. And, you know, so most likely he's going to go 2 years without winning a road game. But the Bengals aren't better than any of the teams that they're going to play. The only winnable game, as you just said earlier, Lindsay, is against the Cowboys. And even that, we're going to get predictions later in the week, but I would be surprised if you two picked the Bengals to win on Sunday. And then they play the Steelers. And we would have to be on some things illegal if we picked the Bengals to beat the Steelers. And then again, you have the Texans, and then close out the season against Baltimore. And Baltimore has some losses this year, and so they're not going to rest their starters that game, because it's probably a game that they're going to need to win for playoff positioning. So that game is an L too. So this team, they're dealing with injuries. They've been decimated by injuries. And with the way their schedule works, with the teams that they have on their calendar, I don't see them winning another game. And for the coaching staff, you know, with the cards they are dealt with, they're just going to do the best they can. And how I will judge them to answer your question is if the Bengals just compete and just give effort. That's all you have to look for at this point, and to see, you know, if position groups, they are playing well. Position groups that are relatively healthy, the receiving core, they're healthy. How are they performing? You know, the secondary, besides, you know, Trey Wayne's not being in there, you know, they're, you know, healthy. We'll see if Darius Phillips can come back. They're pretty, you know, healthy. Let's see how they perform. And let's see if this team is just making, you know, small improvements in some areas. And, you know, this podcast, we're looking at, you know, small victories. And I think for Bengals fans, you have to look at small victories the rest of the way. It's probably not going to be in the win column, but during these games, you know, look at some areas where you want to see some improvement, maybe in the young linebackers, see if, you know, Logan Wilson could improve. Keem Davis Gaither, see if, you know, he's going to improve in these last four games. You know, the offensive line, if they're going to have, you know, some improvements, you have to look at the small victories, because the Bengals realistically aren't going to win another game this season.
I've said this before and I'll say it again. Down the stretch, I'm curious to see how a few specific players perform. At this point, the only one left on offense is Quentin Spain. Defensively, I'm very interested to see how Carl Lawson does. I'm really interested to see how the rookie linebackers do. And I'm really interested to see how William Jackson does. Because with Jackson and Lawson, they're in contract years. And with the linebackers, the Bengals are in a position where they need to see whether or not they need to make an upgrade at that spot during the offseason. Holistically, though, my evaluation of the Bengals stopped when they lost Joe Burrow. I will think of the Bengals as a 2-6-1 team this year. That's who they are to me. That's still a team that didn't win a road game. That's still a team that was non-competitive, very uncompetitive against the best teams in their division. That's still a team with an awful offensive line, a very bad defensive line, and a very inconsistent cornerback group. But I think that the struggles we've seen offensively, the struggles we've seen for the Bengals to keep competitive in games like the one against Miami, and potentially like what we see later on down the season, that will not be a factor in how I weigh the coaching staff.
I want to go to the offensive line right now, because look, the Bengals at the practice field tomorrow, more than likely, I think we can predict what the offensive line is going to look like forward. If Jonah Williams can't go, that's going to be determined on the left side. But when it comes to guard play, I don't know if they're going to put Michael Jordan back out there. I don't
You've
know.
You've been on the Michael Jordan, the bench Michael Jordan train for
Who
weeks.
Was right? Who was right? Who was right when you looked at that? And here's the thing. Here's what I don't understand about that. Because we talked to Zach Taylor after the game, and he said it sounded like Xavier could have gone.
And yeah, he pretty much said his conditioning and performance, you know, what were the factors, the reasons, you know, why they went ahead with Michael Jordan. Now, I'm not breaking any news. Anybody who watched that game knows that Michael Jordan did not perform well. If it were me, I think I said this last week, that I would start Quentin Spain at left guard and Xavier Suofilo at right guard, and have Michael Jordan learn from those veterans and have them watch to see how they conduct themselves and how they perform during the game. That's what I would do, but this team rarely listens to me. Actually, I'll say they never listen to me. Because
they
listen to my three keys, they would have more than four wins since I started working here. But yeah, I do agree with you. Michael Jordan, he has struggled this season. It's not only his technique. I think he needs to get stronger over the offseason. And he has some work to do. But, you know, he's still a young player. There is ample time for him to turn things around.
I do think it's important to look at the context with Michael Jordan. A lot of us, a lot of people were clamoring for the Bengals, or were saying the Bengals needed to get another offensive guard in the offseason in addition to Xavier Suofilo. And they didn't. That in itself was a sign of faith in Michael Jordan. So their offseason, again, partially was shaped by how much they believed in Michael Jordan. Clearly, you know, looking at the production, looking especially how Jordan played last week, Jordan has not rewarded that faith on the field. Jordan has not lived up to that expectation. Clearly, the coaches see that because they benched him before. They benched him again on Sunday against Miami. As a result, you know, when you look at that whole picture, though, you can see why this coaching staff might have been willing to give Michael Jordan a longer leash. But it looks like we might be at that point where that previous credibility that Jordan had earned or that Jordan had gained with the coaching staff has gotten to the point where Quentin Spain might be starting at left guard and Michael Jordan might be on the bench for the rest of the season.
That's to be determined. The Bengals at the practice field tomorrow. Zach Taylor said we should get an update on Jonah Williams, and the hope there is even if he's out for the season, it's nothing serious with the left tackle, but all that's to be determined. I know you guys have plenty on Cincinnati.com. What is up there right now?
Well, I have a story about the Bengals. They collaborated with a local-owned business called Black-Owned to create a limited edition clothing line called Stripes Don't Come Easy. The partnership aims to unify the city of Cincinnati and intends to create healthy dialogue about racism and systemic oppression. Also, CJ Uzama, I talked to him about, you know, his rehab process. He tore his Achilles in week 2. That's a big injury. I've torn my Achilles before. It hurts. It's not fun. It's tough to come back from. But good news for him is his rehab process is going well and, you know, ahead of pace from what he told me. But there's still, you know, he still has a long way to go. But his you know, availability for next season looks good. And also, we talked about it at the beginning of the show, the Bengals' woeful second halves. I have a story in that as well. So check out Cincinnati.com for all those stories.
I'm very excited about a story I'll have this weekend with a lot of draft talk and off-season talk already underway. I'm breaking down, is Jonah Williams' future at left tackle or right tackle?
Fans are going to want to check that out again, Cincinnati.com.
You know, I have questions of the day.
You just try to throw that in there when I'm wrapping it up. What's going on, Tyler?
All right, the first one's pretty easy. Who wins tonight? We're recording this podcast on a Tuesday. The Dallas Cowboys or Baltimore Ravens? And who has more passing yards, Lamar Jackson or Andy Dalton?
I'll go first. The Ravens have been so up and down and probably one of the biggest disappointments this season. I actually hope Lamar Jackson just balls out tonight. I want to see the Ravens get back into it, especially go on like some kind of playoff run. I have nothing against the Ravens. Why not just see them really get it together offensively? It's just, they've just been so up and down all season long, but the Dallas Cowboys, man, I don't know. I'm not a believer in them at all. I don't think that they're going to take the NFC East. I'm going to go Ravens, and then I'll say Andy. Andy has the passing yards.
I've read like 5 different articles about this game today, so that means 5 different times I've been reminded that the Ravens play the Cowboys tonight. And every time I saw one of those articles, I had forgotten that the Ravens play the Cowboys tonight. So I've been surprised by that multiple times. I think the Ravens win, and I think that Lamar Jackson's fine, and that he throws for more passing yards.
Okay. Now, I have a second question. Now, this question, there is no wrong answer. You'll see why. There are no more undefeated teams in the NFL this season after the Washington football team beat Pittsburgh Steelers. So that means the 1972 Dolphins are still the only team in NFL history to have a perfect season. They not only went 14-0 in the regular season, that's when they were only 14 games, they went 3-0 in the postseason. They beat Washington in the Super Bowl that year. They went 17-0 total. So what will happen first, in your opinion? The Bengals winning a playoff game, They haven't won since the 1990 season, or a team having a perfect season?
Oh my gosh, that is a great question. That's a great question. Honestly, I might go perfect season.
Wow.
I just don't know what this
you
team.
You said perfect season.
Yeah.
We're putting that on Twitter, Miss Optimistic.
I mean, what have they proven in 30 years? I just, no.
There's only been one team in NFL
history.
And that has been happening since 1971.
I'm going to get hammered for this. And when they win a playoff game, everyone's going to play this tape back. And I don't even care. Go ahead and play it back. But I have not seen anything to believe that this team is going to the postseason anytime soon. And I don't know, man. I didn't even think the Steelers, Washington won yesterday, and I actually like Washington's defense. I didn't think the Steelers were all that great, even though they were 11-0. I still think Kansas City's the best team in the NFL, not to get sidetracked there.
I agree.
But with this, it might be a perfect season. It legit might be a perfect season. Because I've never even seen this team win a playoff game. I don't even know what that means. Like, what is a playoff win in Cincinnati?
What does that look like?
What does that look like? Do fans, like, do you get excited? Are you nervous? I don't know. We'll have to talk to someone who's experienced that.
Well, the Bengals do know what it's like to win a playoff game because they did win a playoff. They did feel what it was like to win a playoff game in 2015 when the game against Pittsburgh was all locked up. That game was over. And the stadium was celebrating like the Bengals won that game. So I think in the NFL, what does Paul Daugherty call it? The League of Averages or something like that. I think Joe Burrow plays in Cincinnati for a long time. And I think Joe Burrow will be able to at least stumble into a playoff win during his NFL career.
Where you at, Tyler? What do you think's going to happen?
I'm supposed to ask the questions, not
answer. No. You have to answer this one.
This is going to probably surprise you, Lindsay. I'm on Charlie's side. I mean, I agree with the law of averages. A team has not been undefeated since 1972. And I'm not talking just the regular season. Obviously, we saw the New England Patriots go undefeated in the regular season, but then they lost in the Super Bowl. So that's nearly impossible to do. Now, the Bengals, I don't think that they're some years away from winning a playoff game. I'm going to say that. It's not going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen next year. I don't think it's going to happen the year after that. But, you know, things can change relatively quickly in the NFL, you know, due to injuries, you know, if team drafts well, free agency goes their way. The Bengals can turn this thing around and they might be able to win a playoff game before we're all retired and have gray hair and, you know, in wheelchairs. So I think
still doing this podcast then, Tyler.
I think, you know, that could happen at some point before you and I, Lindsay, turn 50 and before Charlie turns, what, 30? No, I'm just kidding.
No, is it going to happen? Here, let me ask you this, a follow-up with that, because you both think that they're going to win a playoff game under Joe Burrow. Look, that might happen. I'm just saying that I wouldn't be surprised if a team goes undefeated in the next couple of years. We'll see, to be determined if they go perfect all the way. Do you think it's going to be under Joe Burrow's second contract?
Oh, man. Does he sign a second contract in Cincinnati?
I mean, probably. I don't know. Oh, now you got people, really.
I'm not going to get people riled up. Let me stop. Man, see, I'm supposed to ask these questions, Lindsay. You have flipped the script on me, and I don't like it. If Joe Burrow signs another contract here, and the Bengals, if they back up their words and, you know, remain committed to building around him, I do think that they will have a good chance of winning a playoff game. And You know, the Steelers, Ben Roethlisberger, who's had the Bengals' number for his entire career, he's going to retire at some point. The problem is Joe Burrow is older than Lamar Jackson, and, you know, the Browns seem to be up and coming too. And so the Bengals, they're, you know, they're pretty much in the same, you know, age-wise category as the Ravens. The Ravens, they're a young team too. They're just good. And the Browns, they're pretty – I mean, they're young-ish, and they're better than the Bengals too. So it's going to be tough because the Bengals are rebuilding, and they're rebuilding while, you know, they have, you know, surrounded by – three teams that have winning records, and for the foreseeable future, they're going to be pretty good too. So it's going to be tough, but I do think that Joe Burrow has shown the ability to win a playoff game if the Bengals continue to build around him and Tyler Boyd, Joe Mixon, T. Higgins, hopefully they get Trey Waynes back at full speed, DJ Reader. They have some good building blocks to build from. It's just they have also a tough division that they're competing against.
I'll say this. If the Bengals don't win a playoff game and on Joe Burrow's rookie contract, that is a massive disappointment for the franchise, because the best asset an NFL team can have is a rookie quarterback on a first contract. That allows, from a team building perspective, you to do so many different things. Yep. And if the Bengals aren't able to take advantage of that window, that is, it's not malpractice, but it's very poor team management.
That's a good point too.
And that's why I feel a lot of people, not to get too far into this, because we're going to be talking a lot of Joe Burrow this offseason, but a lot of people are saying, don't rush him back. I totally get that. If he's not ready week one, don't put him out there. But when I hear people say, oh, sit him the whole 2021 year, you think a football player wants to waste two of his years on his rookie contract not playing? I think Joe Burrow, if he's ready and he feels like he can go, he's going to go out there next year. He's not going to sit out the season, especially if he feels like he can go. Also, I'll wrap this up. I know Bengal fans are going to be really mad at me because I just said all of that. I hope I'm wrong for them. I hope I'm wrong. But I just don't know because I don't know what postseason looks like in Cincinnati sports, and postseason victories is what I should say. So I'm going with the other
one. When was the Reds' last postseason win?
The last series they won was 95, but the last win they had was in the 2012 playoffs when they had a 2-0 lead in a 5-game series.
Oh. Yeah, they should have won. They should have won.
I'm sorry, my hometown teams win championships, so, you know, I don't know what that feels like. I'm not saying I'm a fan of those teams, but, you know, I do know what championships feel like.
Yeah, well, maybe I would say you'd bring good luck here, but the Bengals have won 4 games since you've been in town. So the championships don't follow you, Tyler. They don't follow you, Cincinnati.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I have nothing to say for that.
Well, we'll be back later this week to give a prediction when the Cincinnati Bengals take on their former quarterback, Andy Dalton, and the Dallas Cowboys at Paul Brown Stadium. We'll have predictions and the rest of the Bengals coverage over on Cincinnati.com. Make sure you check it out, E&Q Sports, E&Q Bengals on the Instagram, and thank you for listening to the Bengals Beat Podcast.